What is up, fools? This is the QTR podcast. Today is August 16th, 2018. Man, and to think when I started this podcast 60 episodes ago, I was worried that I wasn't going to have theme music. Now it would just be annoying me having to paste some little clip of theme music in before I start talking. I walk in the door, I walk upstairs, I turn the fucking computer on, and I just want to get going. And that's what I'm doing today. So the hell with everybody that sent me emails when I first started doing this. Like, you don't need intro music, whatever. You know what? You guys are right. Thank you for that support. I'm glad that you sent that in. I appreciate it. Let me remind you of a couple of things before we get started on what will undoubtedly be a magical and fascinating journey today. The first of which is that I recommend a 2-drink minimum for this podcast. Luckily, most of my listeners are complete degenerates, so most of you guys have that covered by 9 a.m. Secondly, I'd like to remind you that I am not an investment advisor. I hold no licenses. This is not investment advice. This is commentary and just discussion of my own personal opinions. And I would advise you to read the lengthy disclaimers I have posted on my podcast website, my personal website, and on my Twitter profile, and pretty much anywhere. Consult a personal financial advisor if you want real financial advice. How do you find them? I don't know. Strip malls, places that say Edward Jones on them, guys in suits. I don't fucking know. I've never actually talked to one. Anyways, however, if you, again, you know, if you have financial questions, ask somebody in a suit. If you want the Q man's opinion, then just shotgun a couple of beers and sit back and enjoy the ride with me here today, right now. With that being said, today's podcast is brought to you by my Patreons. If you don't know what Patreon is, it is a recurring donation service that allows you to donate as little or as much as you would like to the QTR podcast. So if you find any value in my diarrhea of the mouth, you can log on to my Patreon and you can make a donation, which I gratefully appreciate. I just want to give a quick shout out to guys like Hugh Meyer, Guy Loopy, Austin Winrow, my friend Christine Richard actually just became a Patreon. Thank you so much, Christine. C. Neil, Brent James, Mick Dosti, Nick Zizis, all these guys. And also a special shout to my man Chris Boas, who came through in a huge way. Appreciate him with a very generous Patreon. Zach Jones, Colin Hoodsmith, Chris Bede, and then, of course, some of the older Patreons, guys like Rob Lipich and Jean Gouel, Brendan Egan. Stoked that you guys are still with me, no matter how small or how big your donation is. Okay, with that being said, we have a lot to discuss today. Where do I want to fucking start? I'm actually going to go in chronological order of things as I notice them today. So let's start first with this report that was out by Business Insider today called MoviePass Investors Tell Horror Stories of Watching Their Stakes Drop Over 99%, with some losing more than $100,000. And if you follow me on Twitter, you know that I posted something about this today. And I wanted to talk about it because it pissed me off and it dovetails nicely into an explanation of why I give mainstream financial media and quote-unquote Wall Street analysts a bunch of shit, okay? Now, these guys, whether you're an analyst or whether you're a mainstream media celebrity or whatever the fuck you want to call it, I mean, they're not really celebrities, I guess. They just happen to be on TV, but no young girls are posting up pictures of Charles Payne in their bedroom hoping to meet him someday in person. Charles Payne blocked me on Twitter a while back. I can't even imagine the insights I'm missing by not having access to his Twitter feed. Okay, regardless, I do have some beef with the mainstream financial media, and I do have some beef with Wall Street analysts, and this Business Insider article stoked the fire. So if you don't know what MoviePass was, it was an idea drummed up by its parent company, Helios and Matheson, which trades under HMNY. And the idea to MoviePass was they were going to offer people unlimited movies over the course of a month for a monthly fee. That's a great SaaS-like model to bring onto movie viewing, which nobody has really done before, except the economics of the deal didn't really make sense. I don't know what they were charging people monthly, but it was small enough to entice millions of people to sign up for MoviePass. Unfortunately, it was also so small that it made it extraordinarily difficult for the company to cover their operating expenses, which they weren't able to do. And once the financials of the company came out recently and people noticed, I think they had been terrible for a while and people had been critical of this company for a while, saying they wouldn't be able to turn a profit. But of late, the financials must have come into the limelight even further, because the equity markets, which, as I just said about Tesla on my Twitter, a lot of times really need to have their face shoved into a pile of shit to understand what it is that they're smelling. The equity markets finally realized this company doesn't really have a chance of being profitable, regardless of whether or not they sign up a trillion people for fucking MoviePass. It doesn't matter. The way that it's structured, it's not going to happen. So Helios and Matheson needs to fund their money-losing business, so they go out and start offering shares. Then they do a couple of reverse splits, or maybe it was just one 250-to-1 reverse split. I'm not sure. But the point is that the stock is down something like 99% over the last, 6 months. And that was due to not only horrific financials, but the equity markets realizing that the company, likely wasn't worth much, if anything at all, rather. And this reverse split and then continued dilution after that. So when these companies get into this spiral of reverse splitting and then offering shares, similar to the way that Dryships did it. And then prior to that, I think GBSN was another company that pulled the same fucking playbook. You just get destroyed. There's no point of being a shareholder. I think the company went from having a market cap of something like several hundred million, I think about a year ago, to something like a couple hundred thousand dollars, what it is now. Regardless, Business Insider published an article today talking about some MoviePass investors who got their clocks fucking cleaned on this stock. Because let's just lay it out there, okay, folks? The people that are investing in MoviePass likely don't understand the financials of the company. And the people detailed in this article that I'm about to read to you likely don't really understand the mechanics of what a reverse split is and what stock dilution is. And these are the people that wind up getting absolutely pounded when a company does this type of toxic financing. That in and of itself, I would say, not so much of a problem, because these are self-directed investors. All right, if you have an E-Trade account, you have a TD Ameritrade account, you have a Robinhood account, you're a self-directed investor. So it's on you to know what the fuck you're doing and what you're investing in. Some people learn it the hard way. I learned it the very hard way by just pissing away money for a long time, because I didn't know how the capital markets worked. I didn't know what a share structure was. I didn't understand equity valuation. I didn't understand anything, let alone the fuckery that goes on that I'm going to talk about in a second. But if you're running a self-directed account, you have to realize that risk management is something that you will learn. And you will learn it the hard way by getting the shit kicked out of you, like some investors do, like I did, or you will learn it some other way. So what this Business Insider article details is different, though. It details the story of a guy named Ken, and I think they changed his name for the purposes of the article. But it starts like this. When Ken, a retiree investor, logged into E-Trade in March to research a stock called Helios and Matheson Analytics, it looked like a killer deal. And this is what the guy told Business Insider. Quote, "I use the analyst research to decide if I'm going to buy a stock and after buying it, when to sell," Ken told Business Insider, describing a feature on E-Trade that allows retail investors to see a summary of the ratings, buy, hold, or sell, that Wall Street analysts have given a company. Ken liked what he saw in Helios, the owner of popular movie theater subscription service MoviePass, which comprises effectively all of the company's business. Helios stock was trading under $5, but at the time, the two Wall Street analysts covering the stock recommended that investors buy, with price targets of $15 and $16. Ken saw a lot of upside in the NASDAQ-listed stock. On March 6, he bought 10,000 shares at $462, putting $46,200 into the stock, according to E-Trade screenshots shared with Business Insider. The stock didn't go up to 15 or 16, it kept dropping. Over the next few months, Helios racked up tens of millions in losses due to MoviePass and flooded the market with hundreds of millions of new shares, sending its stock into a downward spiral. But as Ken saw the share price tank, the analysts kept to their advice to buy, and he did. Ken bought in May, then in June, then in July, as the price dropped from $4.62 to 81 cents to 25 cents to 8 cents. He stopped in late July after Helios did a 1 to 250 reverse stock split that transformed his stake of a million shares into just 4,000. He had put almost $190,000 into Helios. His stake is currently worth about $200. All right, any way that you slice it, that is a federal ass pounding. Okay, when you're averaging down to the tune of $189,800 in losses, that is just getting destroyed. Now again, let's go back to what I just said. This was a self-directed account, okay, which means that Ken is in charge of his own risk management. So there is a part of me that says Ken should have known better before dipping his toes in the water. He should have done more research. Maybe he should have learned more about how the company planned to finance itself going forward or how it was going to sustain such major losses. But what irks me about this story is the fact that this guy actually did try to do some research. He pulled up the analyst research tool, and what did the analyst say? Well, analysts from Maxim and Canaccord both had buys on the stock. So when this guy, who doesn't understand the way of the sell-side investing world, logs onto E-Trade to try to do what he thinks is due diligence, okay, first off, Maxim shouldn't even be covered on E-Trade. People don't even realize that the analyst coverage that these brokerage houses give you on their website, whether it's The Street or it's Zacks or it's Maxim, are mostly garbage. All right? They're mostly garbage. There's some sell-side analysts out there that do good work, but the ones that you get through E-Trade, through TD Ameritrade, can sometimes be real shit. So let's start with E-Trade. Maybe you guys should fucking drop Maxim and try to replace them with somebody with a little bit better reputation. Or maybe you just shouldn't have analyst coverage of stocks by banks that are doing investment banking business with their respective company. Because here's one thing that I guarantee you Ken didn't understand, and that's that both Maxim and Canaccord, according to Business Insider, have both been employed by Helios and Matheson to help it raise money on multiple occasions. Business Insider says Canaccord's usually the sole bookrunner and Maxim Group is the co-manager. Now, that doesn't surprise me, because anybody that pays attention and anybody that works in the industry knows that investment banks that are doing business with a company generally have a rosier outlook on the company's future than those who are not looking to get fees from that company. That's why it's really important to read the analyst disclosures at the end of any sell-side note, that they will tell you whether or not they make a market for the company, whether or not they do investment banking business with the company, and exactly what their relationship is with the company. But in this case, these two shops that were peddling a $12 price target on a stock that ultimately is now at 4 cents just months later, fucking shameful, by the way, these two shops have made millions off of Helios and Matheson in fees. So, at the same time that the banks were making commissions from the company, These analysts kept their buy ratings on the stock, advising, I guess, whoever was able to get their hands on Maxim's research. I guess it's E-Trade Retail, and, you know, I don't know if anybody pays Maxim just for their equity research, but I guess those people too. They both recently suspended their coverage on the name, but up until then, both had buy ratings on the name up through July. Now, where did these analysts think the company was going to get their funding from? I mean, working for investment banks that were doing transactions with the company, they had to have some idea that they were going to have to raise a shitload of equity, right? Or sell a shitload of equity. You think the average E-Trade investor understands the dynamic between Maxim and the company? Or do you think this guy, when he logs on and sees a buy rating with a $12 price target that hasn't changed, even though the stock has gotten absolutely fucking smoked, this guy thinks, well, the analyst hasn't changed his mind. It's still a buy. He still thinks it could go to 12. And next thing you know, this guy's dumped $190,000. Now, again, there's personal responsibility, too, with a self-directed account. You know how I learned that? I made a bunch of fat finger trades. Lots of them. And I mean, I remember long time ago, 15 years ago, the first couple of fat finger trades you make, you call up the brokerage house. And you say, hey, fuck, I meant to buy when I sold, or I meant to sell when I bought, or I left options in my account that wound up getting exercised over the weekend and put me into a $5 million margin call. Is there any way to sell these shares on a Saturday just to get myself out of the call? I mean, everybody's made those types of mistakes if you've learned on your own. So there's some responsibility, you know, and what did they tell me? They tell me, no, it's a self-directed account. So careful what you do and have a nice day. So there is some responsibility on the investor. But the behavior here of keeping these buy ratings on this piece of shit company that has done nothing but post losses and is now down over 99%, I think, from where it was 6 months ago. While these two analysts kept a buy rating on the stock, that's shameful. And that's why there is a serious need, not only for short sellers who have a tendency to cut through a lot of the bullshit that the sell side serves up, and you could say the same about very sharp long investors who are not afraid to be critical of companies publicly, but not only is there a need for that, but there's a need for an alternative financial media. Because this guy's $190,000 loss is the product of a financial media machine that will just rip the heart out of investors that don't understand what the fuck they're doing. And that is what has happened here. And it's not the first time I've seen it. I mean, I watched some retail investor dump $1 million into SunEdison before it went bankrupt. So not only is it important to have a personal financial advisor that's going to help you cut through a lot of this bullshit, but it's important to educate yourself and to not just rely on the mainstream. You can't just rely on the mainstream news networks. You can't just rely on the analyst coverage you're given. What you should do is educate yourself and then keep an open mind. Try to look at any and all angles being covered on whatever it is that you're looking at. And then from there, hopefully, you can come up with an educated decision on your own, or you can speak to your financial advisor or whoever is advising you on your personal financial decisions to come up with what you think the best course of action will be. But when I said in my May presentation at the Case Learning short selling event, you know, I joked about Adam Jonas keeping his price target on Tesla the same, even though his EPS estimates dropped drastically for the year. I said, these people will not save you. If you think because an analyst report has Maxim or Goldman Sachs or any other investment bank printed on the top of it, that it's worth more than analysis that anybody with a education in the capital markets can do on their own, then you may be mistaken. Because some of the sharpest people out there, they're not equity analysts at Barclays. They're guys like David Einhorn, who has, you know, an engineering degree, I think. It's the outliers and the think-for-yourselfers that usually wind up doing well. And that's not to say that there's not good sell-side coverage, because there is. You just have to know where to look. But what happened here to this guy is a problem. So when people give me shit about trashing the mainstream media or being critical of the mainstream financial media or being critical of Wall Street analysts, remember this example. I've gotten emails and tweets and this, that, and the other thing saying, well, the only way you know how to bring popularity onto yourself is to trash the mainstream financial media. No, that's not. Because the truth of the matter is, I don't really care whether or not I'm popular or not. That's not really what I set out to do. It wasn't like I started this podcast thinking, oh, I want to go global, you know. I don't really care. The goal for me, as it has always been, is to try and simply pull the curtain back on some of the very stunning things that I have found out about within the financial world that to me are disturbing, that I don't think the investing public knows about. I think if the middle class understood how the financial system worked and how the monetary policy that we implement works, I think there would be riots. I really do. Because there is so much whack shit that happens. And this is just a microcosm of that. So this article pissed me off enough today for me to want to make note of it, talk about it in my podcast. That dovetails nicely into several days ago when I almost lost my lunch watching Jim Cramer on Mad Money with a photograph photoshopped in the background of Elon Musk in a Ghostbusters outfit, claiming that Elon was the short buster and that, you know, something to the tune of while he sees some problems, he wouldn't short Tesla stock because of Elon Musk. You know what, Jim? That's fine. I don't need you to short Tesla stock. And you can praise Elon Musk if you would like. But the fact of the matter is, I think you would be doing your viewers a much bigger service if you were just to come out and level with them and make note of the fact that what's going on with this company isn't normal. I mean, normal companies don't go through the problems that Tesla is going through right now. Normal companies don't have their CEOs tweeting unsubstantiated go private rumors. And then normal companies don't find their board of directors at odds with the CEO, where some members of the board are retaining outside counsel and trying to get Elon to stop tweeting, as reported by the New York Times. And normal companies don't have to deal with this shit. Normal companies don't let their CEO go out and call somebody a pedo on Twitter and then not reprimand him. Okay, so you can say whatever you want about Musk, Cramer, and you can say whatever you want about the company. But there is a badly needed counterbalance to the way that you presented Elon Musk a couple of days ago on Mad Money, in my opinion. Because while you're out there telling people, oh, well, I wouldn't bet against him, maybe there's some weird shit, but, you know, too dangerous to be a short here. And certainly I would never go out and tell people to short stock because it is extremely risky. you may have wanted to highlight further the fact that there are an awful lot of problems that are piling up on what seems like a fucking hourly basis with this company. Okay, so let's just cover the last 48 hours. And again, this isn't a Tesla podcast. So we're just going to do the basics here. What I've missed over the last 48 hours while I momentarily took an hour to interview Mark Cohodes about something else. What's happened in 48 hours? Well, the whistleblower Martin Tripp came out and released a couple of tweets that had VIN numbers of Model 3 vehicles that he alleged are now driving around with punctured battery cells in them. Is it true? Is it not true? That remains to be seen. But it's a pretty hefty allegation. And he seemed to have some evidence to back it up. And this guy has retained professional SEC whistleblower counsel. So either he's tweeting this unbeknownst to his counsel, or his counsel said to him, yeah, go ahead, this is the time to tweet out those VIN numbers. Regardless, maybe you want to make mention of something like that. I don't know. There could be some liability from that eventually. Just as numerous former SEC attorneys have gone on Fox Business News, CNBC, there was one on one of the streaming news networks today on Twitter I saw, all saying the same thing, which is that they think the SEC is going to have to do something for Musk making this go private statement with nothing to back it up. At least that's what it looks like right now. So the SEC will likely have to step in, which will create another liability. In fact, it was reported today by my buddy Charlie Gasparino over at Fox Business News, who claims to hate me, but I know you're fucking listening, Chuck. I know you're listening, buddy. But anyways, Chuck had a couple of good scoops over the last couple of days. First, that the SEC was formalizing its investigation into the company, which is a big deal. Because there you go, that might prevent the company from raising capital, maybe. But the second today was that the company is expecting billions of dollars in incoming legal liabilities from private litigation. So that's material. Now, just an hour ago, we have an article out on, I forget what website it is, but there's another article out talking about a second whistleblower who is trying to get to formal whistleblower status with the SEC, who's alleging that the Drug Enforcement Agency sent a note to the company in May claiming that their Nevada Gigafactory was the home of a drug trafficking ring involving, quote, large quantities of cocaine and crystal meth. The same whistleblower also claims that something like $35 million in raw materials were stolen from the company. And that when he went to report that these raw materials had been stolen, that he was fired. Now, people are really starting to come out of the woodwork quickly. And it seems the number of whistleblowers and the number of problems for the company are accelerating. Now, Tesla can issue a blanket denial to all this stuff, which is basically what they've been doing. In the case of Martin Tripp, they came out and said something to the effect of, this guy would have no idea what's going on. And I think to respond to the second whistleblower, they came out and made some type of blanket denial. Of course, his allegation today reminds me of a lawsuit that was reported on back in May, where another employee claimed that they had reported theft of, I forget, tires and wheels or something, and that they were also terminated. So it sounds like that. But the newest whistleblower says in the article out today that he didn't believe the board of directors was ever informed of the fact that the DEA contacted the company and told them that there might be a drug trafficking ring running out of the Nevada Gigafactory. So the board of directors is like, see no evil, hear no evil. And now, it seems, at least via this New York Times article that was out the other day, saying that some of these board members are lawyering up on their own, it seems like Kimball Musk may have finally stopped flipping his vegan hamburgers at his restaurant to look up and realize, hey, some shit might actually be going down at this company that I'm on the board of. If you're on the board, now's the fucking time to pay attention. So it appears to me that the CEO is directing the board. And it appears to me that the board is beholden to the CEO and not the other way around with this company. So you have all these problems tacked onto a financial picture that, in my opinion, for this company looks very bleak. All of these concerns come out of the woodwork. All of them. The stock has dropped maybe 10 or 15% over the last week, as it has become evident that this go private plan doesn't seem to exist. Then you get this shit from Azalea Banks, the rapper who claimed she was at Elon Musk's house and that he was on acid tweeting. And that he was running around the house like a madman with his dick tucked between his legs, I think she said, after he tweeted out this thing and then realized he didn't have the investors for it. At least those are her allegations. But shit, you mean to tell me all of this stuff isn't true? All of it? I mean, maybe if 10% of this stuff is true, it's a huge problem. For the company to come out of this scot-free, all of it has to be untrue. And the best that Jim Cramer can do is put up a photograph of Elon Musk in a Ghostbusters outfit and praise him for making it, quote, a disaster, quote, for those who have shorted the stock. Here's the Cramer article from August 14th. If you don't like Tesla, you should sell it, CNBC's Jim Cramer said, but don't short it. Shorting Tesla has been a recipe for disaster. And then Cramer comes out 2 days ago and says, according to this CNBC article I'm reading, we'll be on Mars by the time the SEC penalizes Tesla for Elon Musk tweet. And that's basically what Gasparino said at one point today, too. Well, they got to let him go. He creates a lot of jobs. He's a popular figure. The Mad Money host says, if you're waiting for the SEC to hammer Tesla, well, let me just tell you, we'll be on Mars by then. CNBC's Jim Cramer warned Tesla critics about getting their hopes up that the federal government will penalize Elon Musk for his tweet about taking the electric automaker private. If you're waiting for the SEC to hammer Tesla, well, let me just tell you, we'll be on Mars by then, Cramer said Tuesday on Squawk on the Street. Well, let me tell you something, Cramer. If the SEC does not nail him for this, they are setting a dangerous precedent for people in the future. And having you out there on mainstream television, not holding this guy's feet to the fire, and then coming out and saying, well, we'll be on Mars by the time the SEC does something, all you're doing is encouraging this type of behavior. You're saying it's okay. It's okay for him to do this, and the SEC, well, they're just not going to go after him, or it's not going to happen anytime soon. I mean, how is that a responsible thing to say? You could tuck that into a fucking Maxim analyst report on Helios and Madison with a $12 price target and put it on the E-Trade retail platform. That's what I think of that analysis. Regardless, the one thing I want to get across today is that it's good to have some perspective. Watch the mainstream media. I do. I have a laugh from it sometimes. But there's some good stuff out there. Read analyst reports. You can't have too much information. There's some great stuff out there. There's also some shit. But I guess the one lesson that I've learned that has helped me out has been to not shut out a source or not shut out something because it's considered alternative, and to analyze things based on the veracity of their claims and the evidence and the fact that they present. If you come out and say that the SEC is not going to do anything or it's going to take a while or whatever, you're part of the problem. You're like Tesla's board. They didn't come out and reprimand this guy for making the pedo comment when any other CEO on any other major company would have been fucking fired immediately. They didn't reprimand him. So what does he do? He comes out and he tweets this other thing now. And now that's got them in a heap of shit. And what broke today after the market closed? The headline that the SEC is looking into what Musk told the board. And the SEC is looking into whether or not Musk put the tweet out specifically to burn short sellers. So the SEC is investigating this guy for doing exactly what Jim Cramer is praising him for doing. Burning short sellers. Is it any wonder people are dying for any type of alternative perspective on the financial world or the business world? Is it any wonder? I started a podcast 60 episodes ago that I thought was going to get a cumulative total of 100 listens. And today I'm about to break through 250,000 fucking downloads. And it's not because I'm trying to be popular, and it's not because I'm out there and I want to be Mr. fucking finance guy, whatever, because I don't. It's the last thing I want to be. It's because people are desperate to not hear bullshit. And people are much smarter than I think the mainstream media and Wall Street analysts sometimes give them credit for. And they know when they're being fed a line of shit. And hopefully, my brother Ken on Helios and Madison understands what happened. Hopefully he finds out and comes to terms with how he fucked up. And hopefully he either goes and gets himself a reputable financial advisor that can help him, or he starts to educate himself. It's like Rage Against the Machine says, take the power back. Know what I mean? Anyways, this episode was brought to you by my Patreons. You guys are some badass motherfuckers, and I appreciate every single one of you. With that, I am out of here for today. Peace.